Hello and welcome to the Nursing Standard podcast. I'm journalist Erin Dean and this episode focuses on the global nursing community. Nurses worldwide are on the front lines of the most challenging situations that people face today. The profession continues to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, to support people affected by the ravages of climate change, and to work in areas struggling with conflict, poverty, and poor access to basic healthcare. All this continues in the face of a global nursing shortage and often poor wages. In this podcast, Nursing Standard talks to the International Council of Nurses, which represents nursing worldwide, about the challenges nurses face internationally. Chief Executive Officer Howard Catton is talking to me about the issues facing the nursing community. Hi Howard, thanks for joining me.
Hi Erin, it's really good to be with you.
So it feels like a lot is going on in the world at the moment, and the nursing profession is dealing with a huge amount, both in the UK and overseas. What do you hear from your members, and what do you feel are the most pressing issues currently?
You're right. I think that, you know, no one can be struck by the fact that global health is dominating our news. The pandemic, of course, but the pandemic is far from over. We are seeing cases still surging in many parts of the world, infection rates going up, and nurses in healthcare systems still having to deal with COVID against the backlog of work and cases which has built up of all other health issues over the course of the pandemic. And then, you know, just in the last few days with monkeypox, the second declaration of a public health emergency of international concern. That's the highest warning that the World Health Organization can give about an infection. And that is now in more than 70 countries so far around the world. So, and COVID still being a health issue of international concern. But we've also, Erin, seeing, you know, issues of, you know, of outbreaks of hostilities and conflicts and disasters that are happening around the world. Of course, most noticeably, you know, in Ukraine, in the invasion there, and there's been a tremendous connection outpouring from nurses around the world wanting to show support and solidarity for nurses in Ukraine. But I see that, you know, whenever there's a disaster, whether it be, you know, a natural or a man-made disaster, nurses, knowing full well that their colleagues in other countries will be at the centre of the response to those sorts of situations and wanting to help them out. All of this taking place against a global shortage of nurses, a global shortage that existed before the pandemic, and we believe has grown significantly as a result of that. That's now feeding through into issues about pay and working conditions. We're seeing increases in strikes and disputes right the way around the world as well. And I think that whilst the image of nursing and people's perceptions, I have no doubt, have been changed and have been challenged as a result of what they've seen of nursing over the last few years. And I think, you know, have really seen the reality of modern day nursing. From nurses' perspective, you know, the warm words of support that they're used to hearing, you know, the applause that there have been from the balconies simply don't cut it anymore. And, you know, nurses are saying, you know, we need to be properly recognized economically, fairly, for the work that we do. So this busy, interconnected global health agenda that we have, not only is nursing at the front line, at the sharp edge of responding to it, I think it's also raising some really fundamental questions amongst nurses themselves about the profession, how it's valued, how we're led, and what our future role should be as well.
As you say, there are a lot of issues there that will be very familiar to UK nurses as well as nurses elsewhere. What kind of impact is the pandemic still having? You mentioned it's not over. We've been living in it now for over 2 years. What do nurses tell you internationally about the impact it's having on their health systems still?
So the first thing I think to say is that, you know, nobody can be in any doubt that the impact on nurses themselves around the world, both on their physical and their mental health, has been enormous. From the very early days, we were talking to associations about whether nurses were getting the right level of protection and support, whether they were getting the PPE that they needed. And we tracked and monitored both the infection rates amongst nurses and health workers, and also sadly and tragically deaths as well. You know, early on in the pandemic, we saw infection rates, running at, 10% or more amongst nurses and health workers compared to everybody who was getting infected. We all know it spoke to the lack of preparedness of our health systems right the way around the world to deal with a global pandemic. But of course, whilst others are responsible for that lack of preparedness, the people who then have to cope with the reality when something like a pandemic happens, it's nurses, and they suffer the consequences. We were seeing and hearing of nurses who were dying as well on a regular basis, and we reported on that, and we eventually did some work with the World Health Organization. You know, at least 150,000 nurses and healthcare workers died as a result of contracting coronavirus. I actually think that's an underestimation. The mental health pressures and impacts were and continue to be enormous, and not just issues of burnout and stress, but we had nurses who were suffering, post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, symptoms and disorder. Tragically, there were a few suicides that we reported on as well. And that we termed all of that the COVID effect on the nursing workforce, with nurses, some leaving because they were unwell, others who were like, we have just given as much as we can and quitting earlier. So huge impact on the nursing workforce. But as I said, the pandemic is far from over, with cases still surging. And what I really worry about at the moment, Erin, is that I'm just not sure that politicians, arguably the public, are seeing the risks that presents. As well, as long as this virus is circulating at the levels it's at, the risks of mutations are really high, and a mutation that evades the vaccine is a wild card here, which, is a big risk. And I think in a lot of countries, nurses feel that public health measures, we should still be implementing many of those and being much more cautious about the way that the pandemic continues to play out. And the other huge issue that the pandemic is still very, very real for nurses. Whilst our politicians might talk about the fact that, numbers of people who are dying is smaller, there are still people who are getting very, very sick. There are still people who are requiring hospital care or more intensive care. And that is against a backdrop of 2 years plus of a build-up in waiting times and waiting lists for people with other conditions. And I'm not sure that a lot of our leaders in many countries are really appreciating the continued pressure that the pandemic plus the backlog of healthcare that we have is causing on the workload that's resulting for nursing staff right the way around the world. And just the other sobering thought, Erin, in relation to the pandemic, the World Health Organization has said that for us to be out of this, having felt as though we've overcome this pandemic, we need a vaccination rate in all countries around the world of at least 70%. I last looked a few days ago. There are only 58 out of 194 countries who have achieved that 70% figure. And then if you look at the vaccination of healthcare workers, you would have thought, wouldn't you now, that we should be able to say that virtually every healthcare worker around the world has been fully vaccinated. Do you know, on the continent of Africa, in low income countries, the rate for healthcare workers who've had two doses of the vaccine, not the booster, just two doses, is less than 40%, stands at 37%. There are still our colleagues in other parts of the world responding to coronavirus without even full protection of vaccination.
That's a really worrying statistic, isn't it, when you think it about healthcare staff being protected against this virus, and shows how it's ongoing. And definitely it's, as you say, nurses are still living with the impact of that, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think that's some of the key reasons, Aaron, why, you know, nurses are saying, you know, I'm done. You know, for many nurses, they recognise the significance of a global pandemic. You know, stepped up as they always do, wanted to give of their best, but we went into the pandemic 6 million nurses short. You know, and you just think about that. That's like being 20% down of what the number of nurses that we should. Then you're asked to take on, you know, for most nurses, the biggest health challenge that they've ever faced during their careers. You go and face that not having, you know, the full protection immediately available, you know, personal protective equipment for nurses who are still not vaccinated, I said as well. But you push on, you do all of that at the cost to yourself as well. We, you know, we had nurses who were, you know, you had this in the UK, I know we're around the world, you know, nurses who were staying away from their families and their loved ones for because they didn't want to put them at risk, particularly in the early stages of the pandemic, and now just feeling that they have given all that they can. And nurses who might otherwise have said, well, we'll work another 5, 6, 7, or 8 years before we retire, are saying, no, we're gonna quit now. So that, and those, that number of nurses around the world who are doing that, we think that you know, that 6 million shortage before the pandemic, when you add in the numbers of nurses who are due to retire, plus what we've called this COVID effect on the nursing workforce, could be up to 12 to 13 million nurses that the world needs to replace over the next few years. There are about 28 million nurses worldwide. That's about half of the global nursing workforce. And we've said from ICN that actually we think the biggest immediate threat to global health is a shortage of nurses and healthcare workers. We think it's that serious.
There's some pretty staggering statistics in there, aren't there? And it's definitely a familiar issue in the UK, the shortage of nurses. And just to move on to a slightly different issue, we've all followed the devastating situation in Ukraine, which has brought war closer to home in the UK. And sadly, that's not the only area of conflict internationally. What do you hear about those at the ICN and how nurses are coping?
So we were in contact and talking to our colleagues in Ukraine, you know, literally within days after the invasion began earlier this year. And, you know, Aaron, I think, you know, I will never forget, it's one of the most sobering, you know, conversations that I've ever had, when you're talking to nurses in their workplace. Obviously I do that a lot, but when the conversation has to be paused or is interrupted because of air raid sirens and people having to move to cover or to shelter as well, it's almost incomprehensible. But you know, I think that nurses also absolutely around the world just recognised the importance of what those nurses, what their colleagues were doing in terms of staying at work, delivering nursing care and healthcare, regardless of the situation that they were in. I think there were a lot of nurses in other parts of the world, and I was certainly one of them, who were just, you know, you think about it for a moment, and that our colleagues in Ukraine, you know, just a few days and a few weeks before the invasion started, were going about, you know, fairly normal lives, living the sorts of lives that, you know, be very familiar with people in the, you know, in the UK in terms of what they were doing. And then overnight, their lives change in such a dramatic way. And we saw a phenomenal outpouring from nurses in other countries wanting to show their support, their solidarity with nurses in Ukraine. And we set up something called Nurses for Peace, which people really seem to connect with in terms of, you know, just a way to show solidarity. But more than that, that we've created the opportunity for people to donate to our humanitarian fund. And we've seen, you know, we said, look, what we will try and do with our association for people who donate is to get money, you know, to nurses in Ukraine and to where nursing care is being delivered. That's not straightforward, Erin, because you're dealing with a country that's, you know, at war. There were sanctions on, you know, on banks and you know, there were lots of logistical problems. But we managed to pass funds now for a number of months through to the association to help those nurses who've been directly affected. You know, the needs that people have in those situations, very immediate, but basic needs for food, for toiletries, for basic medical equipment and drugs as well. Support for nurses' families, nurses with kids, and you know, just, you know, pens and books and things to help with their schooling as well. And we continue to do that work. We're now doing some work with the World Health Organization in Europe to try and support people's mental health needs, because again, that's, as you can imagine, you know, living and working in a war and conflict zone creates huge mental health pressures and burdens. So we're trying to provide some support there. We've also been working with our associations in the neighboring countries in Poland, Romania, Moldova, Slovakia as well. The associations there have been playing a really important role in supporting, you know, refugees, you know, 5 million refugees just in Poland alone, 1.5 million in Romania. These are, you know, imagine that, just this huge numbers. I know that the UK has provided support, but I think that those numbers from the neighbouring countries are really quite staggering. So, as I say, you are, situations like this, you are struck by, you know, by the courage, the bravery of those nurses who are in the middle of a disaster and a conflict, but the fact that they stay, they respond, that they continue to put the people they care for first. And I think, you know, because people around the world, particularly with Ukraine, have just seen, again, you know, the TV and the media have meant that we've seen the reality on a day-to-day basis, that people feel that connection with their colleagues. You know, they feel part of a global profession and they want to support in some small way, and we've been trying to facilitate some of that through ICM.
You see a lot of important work going on there on a really devastating situation that continues, unfortunately. And another one of your areas of work that you mentioned is global warming. And the UK has just endured record-breaking temperatures that climate scientists say is caused by global warming. And the UN says that no continent's untouched by the effects, and that it's also also a major driver of conflict, just to link back to warfare around the world. And what impact is that having on nurses, and how do you see them responding to that challenge?
You're absolutely right, Erin, and there are some of the disasters that we've seen around the world, floodings and landslides and some of the really severe storms and tornadoes that we've seen in recent years are clearly, you know, related to climate change. So again, you know, when those sorts of man-made or climate-induced disasters happen, it's nurses and health workers who are at the forefront of providing a whole range of physical and mental health care. You know, people who have, you know, either physical trauma as a result of some climate-induced disaster, whether it's, you know, infectious disease that then follows as a result of that, issues to do with, you know, nutrition, malnutrition. And then on top of all of that, you know, as we've seen, the mental health impacts of a disaster, people having lost family, lost homes, you know, everything that they've saved and they've built up for as well. And I think, you know, what we've seen in more recent years is that and you know, you're right, the people across Europe who just, you know, been in the middle of this intense heat wave, that those climate induced disasters are now not just things that happen in places many hundreds of thousands of miles away. Nurses in countries, you know, like the UK, who are seeing in their practice, daily practice, the impact of high temperatures on, you know, the ability of somebody who's got, you know, a chronic condition, or who's got, you know, asthma, you know, the impact that has on their health, their ability to live their lives in a, you know, in their way. You know, the people have seen the mental health impacts as well of things like, you know, floods in the UK and in Europe as well. So this is now impacting on people right the way around the world. And it is because that nurses see that in their daily practice that, you know, we as a profession are a really important and legitimate voice globally in terms of policy making in relation to climate change. You know, I remember, and it wasn't that long ago, it was soon after I came to ICM, when we were doing some work on climate change, and people did question, you know, why are nurses so involved in have such views on these issues? And it is because of the health impacts that nurses have to see and respond to. And we had, you know, we've had nurses who've attended the COP meetings, we're involved with the WHO work in response to climate change, along of course with other health professionals as well. We've recently, with other health professional groups, you know, signed up on a call for a treaty to eliminate the further proliferation of fossil fuels as well. And I think it's, you know, like it's good public health. Nursing, we talk about prevention a lot in nursing, of course, but with many of these issues, you know, when you track the health need back to what is causing it, you know, as we know, it may well be that there's issues of climate change that are at play. May well be that there are also other issues to do with, I don't know, housing, work, employment, issues that sometimes people think are not healthcare, but which are, you know, root causes that you need to tackle, the social determinants of health, if you're going to, you know, prevent ill health and promote good health. And that's one of the other reasons why, Erin, in our the ICN has a code of ethics for nurses, and we recently revised and updated it, and we added this new section on global health to make it really clear and explicit that issues around climate change, social determinants of health, issues around human rights, justice, non-discrimination, these are all central to the work of nurses. And absolutely, we as the International Council are going to make sure that the global voice of nursing is heard when those issues are being discussed and debated as well.
And as you say, no one sees the impact on just normal people and the nurses. I think, you know, nurses are the people who are there all the time, seeing day in, day out in this country and elsewhere what it's actually like for people. And the health impact and the mental health impact that that these changes are having. And just to move on to something that we've already touched on, and you know the UK and NHS nursing scene well, having worked as head of policy at the RCN for many years. So you'll know that the problems of short staffing and low pay facing nurses here are very familiar issues. And you just mentioned that you see it as a fundamental threat to health systems worldwide. So how pressing an issue is staff shortages and nursing shortages, would you say?
As I said, Erin, if you look at the data and you look at the numbers, then I do think that it's the most immediate threat that our health systems right the way around the world are facing. We talk a lot, don't we? We hear our politicians and political leaders talk about, you know, we need to improve and strengthen our health systems. And I always feel that's slightly euphemistic as well, because, you know, there are no health systems without healthcare workers. You know, our hospitals, our clinics, our treatment centres, you know, they're buildings, and they're empty buildings if you haven't got nurses and you haven't got healthcare staff. And the scale of shortage is hugely concerning, because, you know, whichever way you cut it, it's not a good outcome. You're running a system that's short. That means that you're putting incredible pressure on the people who still remain, and ultimately they may break and they may and they may go. If you're running short, we all know that the safety risks, you know, forget about quality, just think about, you know, fundamental and basic safety, increase significantly as well. So you're impacting on the quality of the service, and worst of all, and we see this in some places as well, where, you know, there are no staff, simply there is no service, there is no healthcare, there is no health service. And why all of that matters, and I think that this is, you know, I know it's obvious to say, Erin, but I think that it's important to articulate really, really clearly that all of this matters if you care about both individuals' health, but about global health. Often, you know, when nurses articulate issues around staffing or pay, and I see this in different countries as well, it can be turned back as this is an issue about the profession. This is what the profession would like to have. They're trying to advance themselves, or they're being protective about, you know, their profession. You know, it's pitched in that, it's shaped, it's framed in that sort of a way. And I just think we need to, you know, consistently push back on that and say this matters because of the healthcare of people in my town, in my city, in my village, in my country, in my world as well. This is a global health issue. And why that matters, because then people say, oh, well, that sounds all very, you know, that's lovely. Of course, we want the world to be a lovely and healthy place. But life isn't like that. So you just need to, you know, get a bit real and, you know, face up to realities. You know, what we were just saying there, Erin, in terms of conflicts and disasters as well, what this pandemic and what these unprecedented global events that we're facing show us equally is how central health is to world peace and security. And if I'd have said that before the pandemic, before the war in Ukraine, many people might have said, well, that all sounds a little bit fanciful. But we have seen how if health systems fail and break down, the massive impact that can have on our economies, our way of just living a normal, peaceful, secure, safe life. And you see in conflict zones, again, you know, the first thing that is hit and impacted on when conflict happens is people's health care. And when healthcare breaks down, you don't have a vicious circle if it's more likely to result in increased conflict as well. So this, the centrality of our health to our whole way of being globally, I think has never been clearer. And that's why I see in many countries that whilst political leaders may not want to fully recognize that, may not see the continued risks of the pandemic, may push back against investment in nursing and in health services. Do you know, I think the public in many countries around the world absolutely do get it and are prepared to see greater support and investment in nursing. So some people might think it's a big boulder, it's an ambitious call to make, but I think, you know, articulating those links between, you know, nursing and health, but the type of world that we want to live in and the peacefulness and the security that we want to feel in our lives and our kids' lives as well, is a really legitimate rationale and basis for how we should be arguing for investment in nursing and health.
And that emphasises, doesn't it, the absolute importance of nurses and having sufficient numbers of properly trained nursing staff. And we know that the UK recruits a lot internationally. Does the impact of this international migration worry you?
Yes, absolutely it does. As we've said, so there was a shortage before the pandemic, and that shortage has grown. But countries, you know, their need for nurses is immediate and is now. And what we've seen and we've reported on this, Aaron, is that particularly there are a number of high income countries who are now very active again, recruiting internationally for nurses to address their domestic shortage. The UK is right up there as one of those very active recruiting countries. There are others, the US, Canada, Germany, Australia, some high-income countries who traditionally haven't recruited as much from overseas, Finland, for example. But there's a pattern there in terms of higher income countries using international recruitment as a short-term fix to address their shortages. And again, root cause. Let's go back to the root cause on this. Why are those countries having to do it? Because they have not educated enough of their own nurses and indeed other healthcare workers as well. We've put some statistics out there in terms of the reliance that some countries, how reliant on some are some countries on recruitment of nurses from overseas. And you know, we see, you know, the numbers of nurses in the US from overseas compared to their homegrown population make up about 6 or 7% of the total nursing workforce. In the UK it's now over 10% as well. That translates into thousands of nurses that are being needed to be recruited from other countries because they have not been educated at home. And that's a policy question. That hasn't happened by accident. That's a deliberate policy decision not to educate enough nurses to meet your own needs. That might be okay. That might be. Nobody stands in the way of individual nurses moving in around the world. And you know, people have a right to freedom of movement, and they bring an awful lot to their health systems. But at that level, it then raises questions about what is the impact on the countries that you recruit from. And we frequently hear stories from countries who are losing nurses where it has a significant impact on the ability of the country that's losing nurses to deliver healthcare to its own people. And sometimes it's not just about the numbers, Erin. You know, it might only be two or three nurses, but if they're very specialist nurses, they can have a very dramatic effect on the ability of that country to continue to deliver healthcare, which is where we then get into the whole debate around the ethics of international recruitment as well. As I said, nobody is going to prevent individuals from moving, but I've started to think a bit more like climate change, that you know, if we know that there is a potentially detrimental effect from a policy that we have taken in one country, or we haven't, because we've, you know, decided not to educate enough of our own nurses, we need more, if that means that we absolutely will have to go and look to another country and there could be negative consequences, how do you offset that? What do you do to compensate for the harm that might cause? And I hear voices from some lower middle income countries saying, you know, if we'd paid to educate these nurses who then move, then perhaps we should be financially compensated for the cost of the education. You know, climate change we'll think about how we offset, and whether we plant trees and forests. I'm not being flippant about it, but just as an example. And so within nursing, within healthcare, then if a country is recruiting, you know, in the thousands because that's the number that it needs and it hasn't educated itself, you know, should it be building a nursing school in the countries that it's recruiting for example? So those are, I think those are some of the issues that it throws up. And as I said, Erin, there are choices, there are policy and political choices that have been taken that result in where we're currently at with this global shortage and the consequences of it. And I think it's important to call those out.
There's some complex and very profound issues there, and the impact that they have on different countries. So what would you like to see happen? What are you calling for? What could help nurses globally, do you think, be in a better position?
So very simply, nursing needs more serious and sustained investment right the way around the world. People may not realize there is a global nursing and midwifery strategy which we developed with the World Health Organization. It was agreed by all member states. The UK signed up and supported the global strategic directions for nursing and midwifery, and it has a very simple message about the need for countries to invest in nursing education, nursing jobs, nursing practice, and nursing leadership. We've talked a lot about education, scaling up investment in education, jobs, fair and decent pay and working conditions, leadership, having nurse leaders in healthcare organisations, but also in key roles where policy and political decisions are taken as well, chief nursing officers in particular, and investing in nursing practice, the continuing development of nursing, and particularly supporting specialist and advanced nursing practice roles. And if you for anybody who looks at the strategy, we've tried to make it as simple and straightforward, and that's, you know, so it says invest in nursing education, nursing leadership, jobs, and nursing and nursing practice. So we don't need to spend months and years developing another strategy. We know what we need to do. You know, it's the foundations are there in the strategy with what we want the policies to be that with governments around the world to follow. And do you know what we find, Erin, and I'm always struck by this, that when health leaders come together in places like Geneva for World Health Assembly, meetings, the World Health Organization's meeting of all countries, the World Health Assembly that happens every year. You know, nursing and health workforce has been high on their agenda. You know, it's they've discussed these issues of shortages of decent work, the impact of the pandemic, of international migration, produced strategies and policies as well. And leaders who, you know, who come to Geneva or go to New York, other places, agree and sign up. But we often fall down. We frequently, far too frequently, fall down where I don't know what happens on the plane ride home, that people forget what they've committed to when they've been in an international meeting, and we don't see the implementation on the ground. And that's something that we've been working and are now working really closely with all of our associations on, to make sure, you know, it's not good enough for us just to get a great global policy that everybody commits to invest in nursing. You know, it means nothing if isn't then followed through on the ground. And I think that's where our associations are so key and important to hold to account people for, you know, putting into practice, you know, in their own countries, what they commit to when they're in international meetings.
And why does a global community matter to nurses and to UK nurses? If you're trying to summarize the importance impact they can have, we've just been discussing some really important, profound global issues. Why does a united global voice for nursing matter?
Well, so I think the first thing I'd say, Erin, is that, you know, what's run through our conversation is that these global health issues that we're facing, you know, they are truly global issues, but no one country can fix them on their own. Nurses in the UK can't fix climate change on their own. When we see, you know, this impacts of war in Europe, you know, you just see how the consequences of that have a global impact. You know, the food supply of grain to African and Mediterranean countries, and the potential impact of a food shortage as well. So global has never felt and has never been more local. And you know, I get the fact that even just a few years ago, people would say, oh, you know, all the talk of global health issues, it's far off, it's distant. How does it really impact me in my daily practice? And I think that, you know, these events around the pandemic, with monkeypox, with climate change, with the insecurity and conflicts there are in our world, people absolutely get how interconnected we all are, and that if we want peace and security at home, we need to cooperate, collaborate, and work with countries right the way around the world. Well, you know, people, haven't they? They've said for years, you know, infectious diseases don't recognize national borders, and it's not just about infectious diseases. All of these other issues that we've talked about, they don't see the lines on the maps that we've drawn to divide, you know, to divide us ourselves into different territories or into different countries. So I think there's that very pressing and very practical, you know, reason to get involved in global health. But I also have this really strong sense that There is huge solidarity amongst nurses worldwide. We saw this during the pandemic. Nurses, and with Ukraine, nurses who've come together because they want to support each other. They, you know, and you know, sometimes nurses who feel, you know, with Ukraine, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, or question, you know, if that were to happen to me, if overnight I were to find myself in a conflict zone, would I stay? Would I separate myself from my family? Would I go and work for weeks or months in the basement of a hospital to provide care to my patients and be separated from my family and friends? Would I, you know, those are the principles and the ethics of nursing. And, you know, when you see others who are living those in their life, it does, you also do think, You know, would I do that? Would I really, really be able to do that if it happened to me? And people want to show their support, their solidarity. They recognise that they're part of, you know, the biggest health profession on this planet. But it's not just there's also a really important, as well as the support, the learning and the sharing that the being part of the international community brings. Again, during the pandemic, you know, people joined us regularly on webinars that we were setting up, because as well as providing support, they wanted to talk about, you know, this is how the pandemic is developing in our country. This is how we're trying to organise our healthcare. This is how we're changing how we nurse, change the way in which we're nursing, providing nursing care for people with COVID as well. So there was a huge opportunity, as well as to support, to learn and to share as well. And it's, you know, it's as much about what you put into global health as what you get of what you get out of it. And as I said, you know, I think, you know, we created, you know, as I said, the Nurses for Peace initiative after the start of the war in Ukraine. And, you know, a couple of months after that, the WHO changed the theme of the World Health Assembly this year to Health for Peace as well. And I think that, you know, people are absolutely seeing that, you know, health and peace are inseparable. And if we're gonna deliver health, if we're gonna ensure peace and security, then, you know, nurses are gonna be absolutely at the heart of all of that. And that's why the global voice of nursing is important, but it's not a global voice in isolation to what happens, you know, in country or at home as well. It's a voice for health, it's a voice for peace wherever you happen to live or work.
Thank you so much, Howard, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and some of your work with us today. I'm definitely struck by how universal many of the issues, or all of the issues we've talked about, are. Particularly, more than anything, what comes out to me from this conversation is staff shortages, nursing shortages, and how it's just impacting everywhere. So thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure to talk to you as well, Erin. Take care and look after my home, look after the UK for me too.
And thank you very much for listening. Just a reminder that all the resources connected with this episode of the show can be found at rcni.com/podcast, where you can also catch up on any episodes you may have missed or simply want to play back. And we greatly appreciate any feedback, so please do rate or review us on Apple or Spotify podcasts, which will also help other people to find us. I hope you enjoyed the show.